The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Tuesday, welcome in. Thanks so much for being a part of our program. A lot to do and much to discuss. Plenty of time to discuss it in. Let's get right to some of the headlines of the day before we start bringing in some guests. And the Super Regionals are straight ahead. The confusing, chaotic, never-ending first round is over. Florida and LSU lead the SEC charge, but that's not all. It's some pretty amazing matchups. Six SEC teams remaining, and you've got already a guarantee of a few World Series, at least two, maybe more. Florida and South Carolina, winner of that. Then you have Wake, number one team in the country, versus Alabama. Don't forget, the number one team has not always done well in the Super Regionals. In fact, last year, the number one team went down. LSU and Kentucky, another all-SEC encounter. And Southern Miss versus last year's number one, this year's upstart, Tennessee. Who's going to make it to the College Football Hall of Fame? Do you know that man right there? I've seen him somewhere. A lot of big name. That's a guy that once played for Oklahoma. Josh Heupel. Tim Couch also. It seems like Tim Couch will be pretty much a lock. Ryan Leaf. Michael Vick. More work done. Fitzgerald. Takiyo. Anthony Langham. Even Tommy Tuberville was nominated. College Station is where we go next. It's time. Connor Wegman details progress as we head into the summer. There's some optimism about the Aggies after last year's much criticized 5-7 record. Who better to learn more than our man in the heat, Billy Lucci, joining us. Billy, first of all, great to see you, and can't wait to get started here. How are you?
I'm great, Paul. I miss you in Destin. I sent Olin out there, and I was jealous. You had the guests up there in sunglasses, and you guys were all tanned up. I was jealous of the scene out there, so I will see you guys in Nashville,
can't
obviously.
Wait. It was fun. It was. I did see Olin. Let's get right to the headline there, Connor Wegman. Everybody's expecting a great deal from him. What about you?
Yeah, and there's an ongoing battle with he and Max Johnson. Max, people forget, was the starter, broke his hand in that Mississippi State game after beating Miami and Arkansas back-to-back, and you kind of thought maybe they were starting to right the ship, and then obviously it fell apart. They got some real life, though, late in the season with Connor. He had that record-setting freshman performance in the 31-28 loss to Ole Miss. And then to end the year the way he did, so much was made about that win over LSU, but then the A&M season was over. And I talked to Connor a lot about, you don't hear his name mentioned, Paul, when SEC insiders and folks are talking about quarterback play. This was a five-star quarterback that ended the year with about 450 yards of total offense against Ole Miss. And then, he had a rough one at Auburn when the whole team just kind of fell on its face, but then came back and made some terrific throws early and late to beat a top five LSU team at Kyle Field. And that's the last time we saw him. And since then, just sitting down with him a couple times, there's a quiet confidence there. You're talking about a guy that was a five-star in two sports, baseball and football, who there's a level of competitiveness there and kind of that winning DNA mindset along with the skill set that I think I do think a lot of people are sleeping on Connor. I understand if they're sleeping on this A&M team because of the way 2022 went. But as far as the quarterback, I think he might be one of the most overlooked young players in this league.
Billy, last week at the meetings, we had a conversation with Ross Bjork, and he was very upbeat about the conversation that everybody outside of College Station seems to be having. How will Jimbo and Bobby Petrino get along? You know these guys. Give us some insight into how that is working out.
It's a great question, and I don't want to parrot everything Ross said because I heard and read everything. the relationship's been great so far, and I think we all know, you know, that's one thing, but then when you get thrown into the fire on Saturdays in the SEC, and it's a struggle down to down or week to week, you know, how's that going to go? I like the fact, Paul, that Jimbo, and he said this every step of the way, even though everybody wanted him to just say, hey, my offense has stunk this year, I'm stepping down. That he wasn't ever going to do that. But he hired Bobby Petrino. He hired a guy that he trusted and can turn it over to. And what impacts me more than anything is when I get the players in here, both on camera and off, and we're kind of talking about the difference and how things were in the spring and how they've been in the offseason. And they have said, yes, Jimbo has taken a step back. Connor sat in here the other day and said, I mean, he still corrects technique and you know, where my, you know, my throwing motion and the footwork and things like that. But he's clearly letting Petrino coach the quarterbacks, coach the offense, and he's taken a more big picture approach because I do think he's understood that in 2023, as a head football coach, you better be on top of everything from your offense to your coaching staff, your recruiting, your NIL, your facilities, everything and anything, or you know, you're just not going to be able to keep up with day-to-day program maintenance. And I think that's part of why, that's as much why Jimbo stepped back than the lack of production on offense. So the players are telling me that it seems a lot different. That resonates with me more than anything else.
Chatting with Billy Lucci, spending most of our time here about the Aggies. Billy, it was a big conversation piece last week, and it will continue until we know the SEC schedule in a week and in a day. But what is the view from where you sit and that community about what the SEC ultimately did last week, and that's standing firm on 8 games as opposed to 9?
I don't like it. I think the A&M, just based on what I read on my boards, what I deal with day to day in the community, like you said, and I like the 9. And I don't know how it sounds like Greg Sankey, from everything it sounds like, would have preferred 9-2. And I think ultimately maybe that's where we go. And obviously, you know, A&M was one of the teams that voted for 9. To me, you and I have talked for several years now about A&M in Texas, and especially since they've joined the conference. If they're going to be in this league, certainly – we're not going to go forward, and I know they're almost a certainty to play in 2024, but surely we're not going to go forward with where Texas A&M and Texas are not permanent rivals every season. And the 8-game versus 9, I don't think it's the SEC, you know, the whole narrative that our friend Cannell points out every week, which is that they're scared to, you know, play a tougher schedule and they play these weak November non-conference games. It's not that. It's just give me the best formula where in 2 years, everyone can play everyone, and every 4 years, every kid and every fan can see every venue in this league. I've been covering A&M, Paul, since 2012. I've never seen A&M play in Lexington. I've never seen the Georgia Bulldogs come to Kyle Field. We've seen the Aggies play in Knoxville once. That was during the COVID season, so this will be the first year that they've really gone to see a sold out Neyland Stadium. There's a way to get that where that happens, where every fan can see every place every 4 years, and every kid can play every team every 2. And what are you really giving up? And with a 12-team playoff, are we really worried about a world where the SEC is not going to get at least 3 in there every year? Or is this all about getting a 4th? Or is this just about TV money and the contract and posturing right now by both sides and kind of kicking the can down the road, which I think ultimately might be what it is more than anything else.
Billy, before you go on that subject, A&M is in one of those positions where there's, you know, you've got so many different schools that want to play A&M, and A&M wants to play them, from Oklahoma to Arkansas, obviously Texas. Do you have any insight and any thoughts on what it's going to look like next week before we get to 9?
I think, yeah, I do think you're absolutely going to see the Aggies and Longhorns playing. And the big debate, you know, Ross has dug his line in the sand. He's drawn his line in the sand that the first game is going to be played right here across the street at Kyle Field. Chris Del Conte acts like he's not aware of that at all. That's going to be pretty fascinating.
But by the way, why is that, for those of us who may have forgotten?
Why is what? Why did
why
Ross
is the game? Why does Ross so – Sherman-esque about that.
It's pretty interesting. I mean, he's basically said that the league or Sankey have indicated to him that that's where the first game will be played. If you're going to draw that line in the sand, it needs to end up that way. You and I both know that, because if that first game is played in Austin, there's going to be a lot of upset fans.
And Billy, is that because there's still people in Aggie land who feel like they had a belief that this would never happen?
Yeah, I do think that's the crux of it, and that's at the root of it. And it's almost like, hey, you owe us one after all that. And I don't think the SEC would think of it that way. They certainly wouldn't say, hey, we owe you one, we're going to do this. But it sure seems to me like the A&M athletic director has been led to believe that, or even told that first game is going to be there. The Texas athletic director has gotten no word of that. So I think it remains to be seen. But that is, as you know, that's a really big deal, especially when Ross drew that line in the sand the way he's done and has kind of stuck to that last week in Destin.
Yeah, well, we'll have a live look at your place next Wednesday night if that doesn't happen.
you'll see the flames from Charlotte.
Indeed, Billy. Thank you. Always great to see you, Billy Lucci, one of our favorites out there in College Station. We're off and running, pretty fast and hot start, but we got plenty more to do. Andy Woodery from On3 on the ever-changing world of NIL. It was a big weekend. It's a big week for NIL. We'll tell you why in a minute. Thamel on the SEC's still controversial decision, and Stuart Mandel on maybe what's happening in the upcoming season. Big show and your phone calls.
The Paul Feinbaum Show is brought to you by T-Mobile 5G Home Internet, coming in hot to your hometown.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back. NIL Summit Notebook. What does that mean? It means last week in Atlanta, there was an NIL Summit. There's another one this week in D.C. on top of coaches and administrators and commissioners. NIL is definitely in the news, and we look forward to chatting with Andy Woodery from On3. Andy, thank you. Appreciate you joining us. Let's go backwards before we move forward to D.C. Tell us, if you will, about what happened in Atlanta over the weekend. It's an annual summit with NIL, a lot of conversation. What is the takeaway from that?
I think, Paul, athletes are getting so much smarter about their personal brands and about NIL. I think there were more than 500 athletes who were invited and were in attendance. And this is their chance to network, learn from each other. I said in many ways, they're their own peers and they can learn from each other. There's no agent that's going to lie to them. If they're a peer of someone else in a different school, this is their chance to learn, hey, how is your collective operating? What's the support at your school? What should I be doing at my school? And they can actually learn from and trust their peers.
And as we turn the page, another summit literally around the corner starting tomorrow night and heading into Thursday. This one put on by the University of Arizona, but a lot of the major players in college athletics, from the president of the NCAA to commissioners to presidents of universities. What does all this mean? The fact that there's so much conversation about NIL plus all the coaches from various parts of the SEC going up to lobby Congress.
I think, Paul, this is the informal congressional hearing that we haven't had yet, right? The last one, we had a softball player. We had a Division II president. We had a D1 commissioner that's not part of an FBS football league. And there was a lot of smart folks, but maybe not the best folks to discuss NIL in this current landscape. So now having all these people, at least hopefully in the same room, having the discussions that haven't been held in front of Congress, this is a chance for hopefully people that know what's actually going on and know how collectives operate, what their goals are, how the next model of college athletics should work. Hopefully all those folks are in the same room at the same time and can actually have the discussions that have not been had so far.
And Andy, I don't want to rain on the parade, but this is a lot of firepower, especially the one in Washington. What realistically is going to be the end result of all of this?
A few photo ops, maybe some business cards and handshakes. I mean, I would love for there to be a great answer and say, hey, you know what? We've hammered out the next model. Give us a few months or a few years, and we're ready for the future, Paul. But I think there's still so many moving pieces and parts, and who knows, do the people that have that authority want to listen? Because like we learned at the last congressional hearing, when we're discussing tackling dummies for hearing this allegedly about NIL, it's so easy to get sidetracked with all that's going on. So I'd love to say that, you know what, this is their chance to hammer out the next era of college athletics. And I hope they have a productive start in that conversation. But I think it's a lot to ask and assume that, you know what, give us a week or two and it's all good. We'll figure out where the next, 30 years of college athletics are supposed to go, Paul.
But Andy, the D.C. component is interesting because, I mean, we both know that the top leaders in college athletics have met with the top people in Washington. It's not publicized. You don't see the photo ops, but it is a fact. That's with the top people, the people that can make things done. What's to be accomplished by just meeting with, I don't want to say random, but interested parties, and maybe I'm answering my own question, but the people interested enough to shake hands with collegiate leaders, they already have their votes, don't they?
I think they do. Maybe this is their chance that, you know what, the lobbyists can say, hey, look what we got done. We got this meeting. We had this great 48 hours. You're right. I don't know what's the end goal. What does that look like? So you're bringing two pretty big bureaucracies together, and maybe they don't have to work in unison. I think there's a way that maybe the NCAA and its leaders could figure out on their own. Is there a way we can solve our own issues without going to Congress? So when you have the NCAA in one hand and Congress in the other, that's a lot of different committees and working groups and councils. That is it actually just making things messier? I don't know.
Realistically, there are a lot of proposals. We had a senator on here a couple of months ago talking about one of his bills. Congress has bills. You follow this very closely. Is there a composite of what these bills are going to look like, and what do they mean?
I think we know the goals for the Power Five and the NCAA. I've done some reporting. We know that they want no employee status. They want to protect the broadcast revenue, which is only increasing. They want preemption of state laws. Now, they can't get all of that, and I think deep down they know that. But as far as the different bills, you know what, some maybe offer an antitrust exemption. Some might target collectives pretty strongly, or at least maybe nonprofit collectives. There's a lot of moving pieces and parts, and I think there's a reason, Paul, that I believe not a single one has even gone to the floor for like an official vote. So there's lots of, there's press releases, there's photo ops, there's lots of noise. But as far as the tangible action, I still think as far as what's the composite bill, or when people talk about like a skinny bill or a narrow bill, I think that's still just far enough away that those specifics haven't yet been consolidated to the eventual answer, if that answer even lies in the hands of Congress.
We'll get it all this week, from coaches to ADs to presidents. Is there one? Is it Charlie Baker? Is it Commissioner Sankey? Is it Jim Phillips? I know he's going to be there. Is it someone from the world of intercollegiate athletics that you believe can be the leader of all this, to have everyone else coalesce around this individual? Or are we just seeing a collected group of people all talking to a big pool of other people, and the next time I see and talk to you, I'll be asking you the same questions?
I think it's a big campfire. It's a big kumbaya, right? I mean, we can't even agree on 8 games versus 9, right? Or what does our conference schedule look like? Divisions, no divisions, pods. There's so much stuff that, you know, should be, not that it's simple, right? But stuff that shouldn't take as much discussion across, you know, conference membership and realignment. And now we're talking about these big existential questions about employment status and revenue sharing and NIL and preemption of state laws that, you know, people say, should there be some, you know, figurehead or some commissioner of college football, right? Or even should the NCAA president have more power? I just think people, maybe in a good way, are selfish for their own constituents, as they should be. It's just, it's so big across, and even include like D2 and D3, Paul. There's so much going on. How does one person possibly try to wrap their arms and govern all of this? I don't know if that's possible.
Well, it used to be the job of the NCAA president, but the last guy failed so miserably that the new guy, so to speak, needs a big-time shovel to clean it all up. Hey, thank you, Andy. Great to see you. Andy Wittery from On3. We'll take a break. It's been a breathless first 25 or 30 minutes here. Your phone calls are around the corner.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Off and running, have not taken a phone call. Really eager to talk to some folks. And Ricky is up first. Good afternoon, Ricky.
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you doing today?
We are doing great. What about out there in Cali?
Well, it's actually very strange. We had a little rain predicted today, which is unheard of in June out here.
Ooh.
It didn't amount to much, but that's quite shocking.
The marine fog and then the rain. It's a crazy time.
And, of course, we don't have global warming, do we?
Well, we do where I live.
I want to make a comment on I heard you talking with Barrett Solis on Friday, I believe it was, and I heard you ask him the question, Barrett, what have you learned? What did you learn yesterday? So what I learned yesterday was that we, most of us, kind of thought that Greg Sankey was the most powerful guy, certainly in the SEC, but most people think he's the most powerful commissioner. And he was for 9 games, and Napoleon Saban was for 8 games, and who won?
Hell, Saban.
I think, you know, that's exactly it. And while we're talking about numbers here, I don't know why I'm the only one that could come up with a solution to this thing here. I have a simple solution. It's for the 12-game schedule, let's play 12 out-of-conference games. Don't play any conference opponents. What that's going to do is that's going to open it up to where all 16 teams in the SEC can become bowl eligible. And no telling how many slots, 10 or 12 of those playoff spots would go to the SEC teams. I don't see. And how can the other conferences talk about us playing a weak schedule? We're not playing each other. We're playing them.
That's fair. Hey, so, Ricky, thank you very, very much. John is up next in Louisville. Hey, John.
Hey, Ricky, nailed it, and what a solution, right?
Ricky, don't lose that number.
No. Hey, enjoyed the interviews with Billy and Andy. I am sleeping on Texas A&M, but I found it interesting that Texas A&M is even more arrogant than Texas.
Well,
with the,
John, you heard Billy. They have drawn a line in the sand.
In the sand, right. Whatever.
And now, hey, is that in the sand over in Riyadh, or is that the sand down there in Ponte Vedra? I don't know where that sand is.
I was just going to get to that, but first, you know what day this is in history, right?
It's one of the most important dates in world history. June 6th, 44, this D-Day. This is a day that I think has inspired, just watching that video this morning, like we've seen so many times, that truly is the definition of a hero, is to jump off of a boat knowing you're probably going to get killed.
Yeah, and by the way, I'll recommend a book. It's called Bedford Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And 19 of the 31 soldiers from the small town of Bedford were killed in the first 10 minutes. That's where reminisce the scenes on Saving Private Ryan.
I happened to be on a plane a couple of months ago, and that movie, I put that movie on because I had not, and I don't want to say you don't need to see anything more than the first 20 minutes, but the first 20 minutes of that movie are about as mind-blowing as anything you'll ever see.
And that is the Bedford Boys story.
That is
amazing.
Hey,
Paul, on the PGA LIV merger,
yes.
Obviously fans should be rewarded. It's a bad news for all those litigating attorneys, but I have a place still down Ponte Vedra Beach. How do you think those two groups, the guys down in TPC are really stuffy lawyers. How are they going to mix with the folks out in the sand?
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest story of the day. And I mean, it's shocking when you think about Jay Moynihan, the PGA commissioner, saying all the things he did, keeping people like Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas from making anywhere from $250 million to $1 billion, maybe in Tiger's case, and then to cave in. That's the world of business. I mean, the fact that it was announced, on CNBC, tells you all you need to know.
Money makes strange bedfellows. They can change in a dime with
but
the dime.
It's also, I really never got into it all because you have to understand the debate. I don't want to go Phil Mickelson here because I do understand geopolitics, but I'm less concerned about Saudi Arabia as I am, the lying and obfuscating from the PGA commissioner.
That's a good point. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying. The rest of it is self-explanatory. Everyone knows this story by now, but the people that stood up for what they felt was right, they were run over today. I understand the business world. Compromises are made all the time, but I think to distill this down to simplicity, the PGA Tour knew it was about to get exposed for being a bunch of frauds. The depositions were already being taken. This case was heading down the legal track. And whether you can't stomach the Saudis or not, the PGA Tour was going to be exposed for its heavy-handed practices. And that's why they caved in. Thank you for the call. Pat is up next in Georgia. Hey, Pat.
Hey, Paul. Called in about the merger with the PGA Tour and the LIV Tour and the European Tour, but do we really want Congress trying to straighten out the NIL?
I really don't, Pat, and I know I'm going against the grain because we all every what college athletics is essentially admitting is that we have nowhere else to turn because I don't want to say they, but the NCAA has done such a poor job that there's almost nowhere else to go. And I think it just shows. I'm going to be up there later in the week, so I'll tell you more when I get back. But I am really intrigued to hear if we see anything more from Congress than what Andy just got through describing.
No, absolutely. Now, getting back to the merger, I've been following this, and I've been on both sides of the fence, depending upon information that I get. But I think where the PGA messed up was they did draw a line, and they said, if you're going to play on the LIV Tour, you can't play on the PGA right. Tour. And that is going to be that's the commissioner's downfall, and that's why they have decided to merge and do what they're doing. And it has to do with the global economy, and it has to do with the fact that golf is played all over the world, and the most growing place is in Asia,
sure.
in the Pacific Asia area. And, I mean, the world, going back to Mr. Friedman, the world's flat.
No, I think you're right, Pat. And by the way, I'm a fan. I thought the LIV Tour, nobody was watching it. Nobody was interested in it. I want to see the best every week. I don't want to see 8 or 9 of the best playing in front of 100 people on whatever network they were on. But it's a warning that will be taught in business schools for many, many years in the future is, you know, when you're under fire, you better be careful what you say, because I have a feeling, and you've been in the business world a long time, Pat, the number of actionable comments made by Moynihan and his lieutenants, you know, probably was going to sink the PGA Tour, let alone you know, give the LIV Tour a victory in court.
One more point, Paul. What did the commissioner think he was doing when he banned 54 of the top
exactly.
players in the world? The their sponsors,
yeah, no,
the major sponsors, and the 45 tournament sponsors. They want those players.
I mean, it just shows you how bad it is when you're able to make Greg Norman look good in today's sports world. You've done the undoable. Hey, thanks for the call. We're up against a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285, and we're back after this.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We're back here on a Tuesday. LT is up next. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
So speaking of the merger between the LIV Tour and the PGA Tour, the Golf Channel did a very interesting interview earlier today with Mike Tirico. And one of the things that Mike said was that not only will the Saudis support and fund professional golf, they very well could fund college golf NIL deals. And then, this is the very interesting part, Tirico said the next step could be they might even venture into funding other NIL deals and collectives such as, quote-unquote, in SEC sports. And he specifically mentioned the SEC by name. And I realize that's probably speculation on Mike's part, but my question is, do you really think the SEC presidents and athletic directors would actually allow the Saudi public investment fund to invest in SEC team collectives or NIL deals? So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that because, you know, if that happens, the landscape in college football, the financial landscape, could really change to something that we've really never seen before. So I'll hang up and I'll
Thank
let you,
LT.
You answer.
The obvious answer I have is I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think they would allow it, nor do I. I mean, I know nothing about what interests, how far the Saudis will go. Golf is something that they understand. I don't know if they understand college football. and especially the audience of college football. So I think you have to look at it from, you know, what's in it for them. And I'm not saying we couldn't see this way down the road, but I think immediately I do not think that is an issue. Unless Tirico knows something, and he would know a lot more about the golf lines of demarcation than I would. James is in Arkansas. Hello, James.
Hey, Paul. How's it going today? Hope
very
you
well.
A good day.
Thank you.
I kind of got a gripe. I keep hearing callers calling and griping about how much these players are making. You know, I mean, I know they're college athletes, but, I mean, we shouldn't use that as a holding against them. I don't really care how much money they make. I like it for one. The good thing about that, when you got a good paying job, you're going to have to work harder to keep the money. So I think they're, you know, and the ones that aren't making money, they're going to get pushed harder to get these NIL deals. And another thing, the transfer portal. I like that too. I always hated these kids had to wait a year when these coaches can come and go as they please. These coaches think they go out, get this player, they recruit him, get him on the team. Oh, he's stuck. He can't go anywhere. Well, why don't you do your job and work a little harder to retain these players? Find out why they're leaving and fix the issue. And second thing, Congress. All these coaches get ready to meet with Congress. Well, if you turn around and you screw this NIL up for these kids, I hope they suffer. I hope the coaches don't get these recruits. I hope these recruits go elsewhere. My daddy always told me, be careful who you're seeing with. And if you're seeing with congressmen on TV and, you know, and all of a sudden NIL gets screwed up, and I see Nick Saban up there, which I love Nick Saban, but at the same time, I'm thinking as a young man. If I see him up there and all of a sudden the money's gone when I get to college, I don't think I want to go to Alabama. I really don't.
Thank
you. What do you think about that, Paul?
By the end of the week, I think we'll know which way this thing is going. If they can get Congress to help them in a positive way, then I'm for it. But right now, it just seems this almost seems like a last resort. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it very, very much. Brandon is up next. Hello, Brandon.
Hey, Paul. Thanks.
Don't think Brandon got through there. Let me try another caller. Matt is up next.
Hey, brother. How you doing, Mr. Paul Feinbaum? I heard you talking to Billy Lucci, huh?
Yeah, Billy.
I guess what he had to say was everything was underneath the radar and we're going to do nothing this year because of our record. But like I said on the show, once you look at the roster, when all these critics look at the roster, except for you, you're not a critic, Paul. You're actually non-biased. Look at the roster. You still got that class. But 2022 is still there. The five-star quarterback in Connor Whitman, but they don't want to look at that because they're biased. They want to see us fail. And it's something I got to get off my chest, Paul. I don't want you to listen. I don't want you to become radical. You actually want, why don't I talk politics on the show? Well, I'm going to answer your question. The reason why I don't talk politics on the show, because my beliefs are kind of like world peace beliefs a little bit. I don't think humanity has a right to kill, fight, or destroy each other. I'm not going to mention Ukraine because that's a secession, to my belief. But I don't think they have a right to do this and pollute the planet because they think, because this is going through seasons, some religious bullcrap too. I'm not into that stuff. I don't believe that way. I believe there's consequences to whatever you do in life according to the planet. I believe they should judge a man based on the color of his skin, or he's gay, lesbian, whatever. I don't believe that way. I judge a man based on his character, how he treats people, And basically, I don't want to tell you this, but I want you to think I'm radical. I don't want you not talking to me anymore. My friend's on the show.
Thank you, Matt. Dave is next.
Hey, this is Dave from Missouri. I got cut off earlier.
You're on now.
Does Paul not want to talk about my book?
Dave, this is Paul.
Oh, hi, Paul. Thanks for letting me get in. Hey, a few years ago, I knew a girl in college that knew that I had had a lot of interesting stories in my life. So she did a term paper on me, on my life from 5 years old until my wild and crazy days in college, but
okay,
but
they've only got a couple of seconds, so you want, I'm assuming you want to write a book.
Yes.
Is that right?
Would you buy it?
I'll buy it. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.